to the second day of the first meeting of the committee. First item on the agenda this morning is actually to go back slightly to what we were discussing yesterday on vesting and non-vesting conditions under IFRS 2, and Michael Cranky has been working all night to produce a summary of our original submissions to remind us of what the original question was, despite all of the interesting things we were discussing yesterday. I don't know if everybody's had an opportunity to go through this, but perhaps, Michael, you can just briefly take us through the recap, if that's okay.
The first submission was received in May of last year and initially discussed at the July meeting. And that was a question of whether a condition such as the FTSE 100 index, whether that is or is not a vesting condition. Some people said that that condition in and of itself is not, because that condition does not require service. Others argue, well, no, you have to be in service when that condition is met, so therefore there's an embedded service requirement, and that would make it a vesting condition. So that was one of the issues that came up to us, taken onto the agenda. The second issue actually had two specific questions, but the overarching theme of it is whether vesting conditions, especially performance conditions, can be distinguished from non-vesting conditions. The two specific questions that was included is, does there need to be a direct link between a performance target and an individual employee's services that they provide? And secondly, when this target is a performance target, does it matter whether the either explicit or implicit service requirement is shorter or longer than the time over which you are determining whether that target is met? Appendix A then shows all of the prior IFRIC update summaries, just so you can kind of see a chronology of the conclusions reached at all the prior meetings. And that's that.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. So if we take ourselves back then to the paper 3D, which we discussed but not completed our deliberations, and specifically I didn't ask you to be definitive on the questions that the staff had raised, but now comes the decision time. We had, I think, a very good discussion yesterday to explore all the different nuances, thoughts, hopes, and fears that members have. And you've obviously had a good night's rest in thinking about that, apart from Andrew, who's still biting his lip, wondering who is going to be in charge of his finances for the next few years. So, Andrew, we'll forgive you if you make some strange remarks during the course of today. So I think the first question is just to reflect back on the decisions or the recommendations that the staff has in the paper which was set out in paragraph 2 of agenda paper 3D. What I'm going to ask you is perhaps slightly different from the way that the staff has phrased it, because there are really two parts to this. The first part is, staff has been through, I think, with the original submissions, has reminded us that the questions that were asked in the original submissions can be answered by the way that the staff has analyzed and make some recommendations for what changes we might make. We'll consider how we might do that in a moment. So the first thing is really whether you disagree with the recommendations that the staff has come up with out of the analysis on a purely technical basis. The second question, which obviously is related to that, but I'd like to keep it separate, is then, so if we agree, what are we going to do about it? So if you can try and keep those two separate. So you might think that, yes, you agree, but it's really too much for the committee to take on, that it's something that should be done as part of a specific review, or you may agree, but you don't want to take all of the items on, you just want to do some of them, or you agree and you would like to take them all on. I mean, there's a number of different ways in which we can resolve this. But the first thing is, are we talking about something that is technically correct or technically acceptable to you? I'm not asking you if you think it's totally reprehensible, but if it's something that you feel is inappropriate that the staff is recommending, then I think this is the time I'd like to know about that. So Andrew, we'll give you first voice this morning.
Take my mind off other matters. I'm not sure is the answer to that question, because I think Ruth made a very good point yesterday. I mean, there's an awful lot in these staff papers, and it was, you know, it's good analysis, but at the end of the day, if we said yes to all these recommendations, what would change from where we are now? And I'm not entirely sure. If everybody else is, that's fine, but I'm not 100% clear of if we just said yes to all these recommendations, where it would lead us.
Yeah.
I agree with Andrew, and I would like to add that I'm not convinced that the new proposal solves the questions that we have gotten here in the submissions. For instance, the one that talks about has there to be a direct link between performance target and employee service. I remember the discussion we had yesterday about several examples where people were not sure when they looked at Appendix E whether this is a performance condition or not. So besides that, I think that this is interesting piece of work that the staff prepared here. I think it's too much. We should concentrate on the questions we've got.
Then, sorry, I'm going to put you back on, Guido. Specifically, your concern is that you don't know if we've actually improved anything by this analysis.
Well,
the real question is, if, going back to the original submissions, do you think by using this analysis we would have been able to answer the question that was raised?
Some of them, yes. For instance, the things that are included in paper 3C, where we talk about, you know, interaction of conditions, vesting conditions, service conditions. Uh-huh. I think that's helpful. That was also one of the questions that was raised. On the other hand, this direct link, what is a performance condition, what is specific to the entity, does there have to be a direct link between the service and not? I think this question has not been answered in the paper that we've seen here. So for some of them, yes, for some of them, no.
Okay. So to be fair, then, it's not that there is no change, that there is some improvement in that it's easier to answer part of the questions that were submitted, but you don't think we've got all of the information we need at the moment in here, or all the clarity in here that would answer all of the questions without a shadow of doubt.
Yes. So, okay. Well, I really like what is in paper 3C, where you talk about interaction of conditions. That was one of the questions that were raised, and I think the answer that's given here is very good. I think it's already in IFRS 2, but it makes it clearer. But other questions that were raised, I think, with this new concept that we have here, for me it's even harder to come up with a solution for this question.
Okay. Laurence? No, you must learn. I'll come back to you later if you want. No.
I wish I could say yes, because I like the chart, it looks simple and so on. But I'm afraid, well, first of all, I expressed some concerns about some proposed changes, particularly on definition vesting condition. And I am concerned that some of the definitions will not be robust enough to solve the issues that have been addressed. And in particular, when I look at the issue that is highlighted in paragraph 6A of agenda paper 3E we have received, does there need to be a direct link between performance target and individual employee service in order for that condition to be a performance obligation? When reading and after the discussion we had yesterday, I wasn't sure we have the answer. And also, I think that the SAYE plan issue has not been addressed by the proposed approach. I think with non-compete agreements we didn't discuss yesterday, I'm unsure that we have an answer. So I'm embarrassed to say that I feel confident this will be robust enough and will solve the issues we had identified. So,
yeah, but I'm not asking you to vote on any final proposal, as opposed to have we got agreement that these answers are an improvement and help to clarify. We can still do some more work to fill in the gaps. But one of the things that IFRIC has as an objective is to reach a consensus within a reasonable time frame. And if we can't do that, if we're going to continue deliberating and deliberating and deliberating, then this is off our agenda because it's just too big to handle. But that's my concern. If we can't keep coming back every meeting and saying, and here's some more information, and we say, well, that's not quite enough, we'd like a little bit of something else. This is a focus question. We're dealing with the vesting condition issue. The original questions that were asked, we've had some very broad-ranging analysis to help us to understand, in fact, that perhaps the subtle message or not so subtle message of the staff is that, yes, if you tackle little bits on their own, it's only going to encourage people to come back and say, and what about my fact pattern that you didn't actually explain because you've only given me really a rule that applies in these specific circumstances. You haven't explained the basic principle that underlies this approach so that I can actually work it out for myself in future. That's really what I'm asking you to get to. If you think we can get to the principle by using this analysis, then that's fine. But if we're in the wrong direction already, it's going to take us an awful lot of work to find the principle. But many people are wanting to come in now. So, Jean-Louis?
Well, I just want to reiterate what I said yesterday. I think that we need a kind of principle-based global approach in order to distinguish between vesting and non-vesting. I understand that for some specific situation like the one Guido and Lawrence mentioned on the link between the performance condition and the individual employee target, there might be some additional difficulties. But the point is whether we try to have a line, a comprehensive vision of the problem or not. And in my view, we are on a good way to have a comprehensive vision of the distinction, and that's for paper 3B, and in my view also paper 3C is a real progress. So in general, I would encourage going further. I don't know which way, that maybe we'll discuss this after, but in my view it's a good move.
Okay, Scott.
I do think this heads in the right direction. I certainly was more optimistic after I read the papers than I was after the discussion yesterday, but I still remain somewhat optimistic that we can get to a point that answers the questions. It sounds to me like the real remaining issues to work on are improving that definition of performance condition so that we know exactly what the line is between a performance condition and an other, and questions like, does there have to be a direct link between the employee's performance and the performance condition? Are we talking about performance of the employee or performance of the company? Whose performance are we talking about? Or maybe it's either. Maybe performance of either one of those equals a performance condition. And what if the performance condition is by measure to measure against a market or other condition? In other words, if the performance condition is return on equity has to be higher than a basket of my competitors' return on equity, well, is that a performance condition or is that an other condition? But I think it all surrounds defining exactly what falls in that performance condition bucket. And if we can do that, to the extent that people around the table are comfortable that they know what the answer is supposed to be, I would submit we're not likely to get to a spot where we actually agree that the answer that comes out is the best answer in all cases, because we've got a standard that has a line in it that is somewhat arbitrary. There's a basis for it, trying to ease some measurement problems that come with these service related requirements. We're not gonna be able to find the perfect principle that puts things on the right side of the line. But again, I think the goal here is to know how we're supposed to answer the questions, and I think we're relatively close to being able to do that. And if we focus on that performance condition definition, we'll get there.
Thank you. Joanna?
I agree with that. I think that we are heading in the right direction, that whichever form it takes, we should continue to pursue this. I think that the principles and the clarity around the principles, in some ways, although Laurence says it doesn't answer 6A, in some ways I think 6A might not have been asked if these had been the principles that were there, because it wouldn't be such an issue, because I think they would have been able to, I mean, I don't know, but they might have been able to slot it in. So I think articulating these principles and going along with that is advancing IFRS 2 quite substantially. So I would support continuing.
Thank you. Ruth?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think in answer to your first question, is this an improvement over where we are? I think absolutely yes. I think if we'd received this paper and we had Appendix E and we had Appendix D or C or whichever it is, the one with all the how you assess the multiples, we would have been able to reach a conclusion much easier, much more quickly than if we didn't have this work. So if I look at it that way, I think that must mean that it's an improvement. It still may not have been absolutely clear, but I think we would have got to a conclusion more easily. So that says to me that it's helping. It's making a difference. I don't agree with addressing it piecemeal. I think we need to address it, you know, with the staff recommendations, we need to address all of the definitions. I would love Appendix E to be the standard, and Appendix C or whatever it is, the interacting thing, to actually be the standard instead of having to read thousands of pages of words and not know what it's talking about. And if we could achieve that, I think we would be moving forward. So I think it is a significant improvement. I'm not sure how to deal with it. Perhaps the answer is to give it to the French standard setter and ask them to keep working on it. but I would be disappointed if we lost this work and if it went nowhere.
Yeah. Thanks. Peggy?
Yes, I was going to give the same comments as Ruth did. I think the work that's been done has been excellent so far. I think the appendices that have been created are very, very helpful and really simplify on one or two pages some pretty complex rules. And so I would highly recommend that we continue moving forward.
Thanks. And finally, Tak.
Yes, I highly appreciate the work that staff has done. And for the preparer's viewpoint, this is very helpful. And in this sense, it's good to publish this kind of paper in some way. But if I allowed to say my personal feeling on IFRS 2, I personally have a feeling that is this the thing what the accounting standard should do? And it may be necessary for the financial institutions or some IPO companies, but so if you look around the ordinary companies, do we really necessary this type of precise standard? And this kind of work of definition making process could be endless. Even if we make a good definition, then we need another detailed definition. So that's why I'm wondering, is this what the accounting standards should do? But coming back to my first point, I support publishing this type of clarification because it will be very helpful. And but at the same time, I have to say that we need some comprehensive restructure for the IFRS 2, because it's too huge as an accounting standard. That is my personal frank comment.
Well, thank you for sharing with us your personal views on IFRS 2, and particularly your support for the changes or the improvements that the staff has been discussing on this particular one. There clearly are some concerns that we aren't there yet. But the sense that I have from the comments that have been made, despite those reservations, is that we're heading towards an improvement. Whether the improvement is going to be too big for people to swallow, and in fact we should do what Tak said and give the work to Jean-Louis and say, yeah, go away and don't come back until you've finished it, which would be a little bit harsh on you, I think. But certainly the work that the French Standard Setter is doing in its more comprehensive review of how to express the principles of IFRS2 in a clearer, more understandable way is something that is laudable and something I personally support. It would be interesting if the book of IFRS only contained these diagrammatic representations and a few pictures, which, Patrick, we must make sure we can translate these pictures. You and TAC have a great responsibility there. One of the areas, I suppose, that we will give it one more try at, if the staff is willing to engage in this, and you don't actually have any choice, so please listen carefully. That's the area of performance condition that a number of people have raised, and the uncertainty about how some of the conditions would be dealt with under this model. Now, I don't think what's going to help is for the staff to come back and think in a vacuum of all of the possible things that they might do to improve or clarify. You're the ones who actually can help them, because you're the ones who have the concern about what we've got at the moment. So I'd ask you to go through your organizations, businesses, other businesses you're associated with, and identify circumstances that you think are not clear by looking at the chart. And that's Appendix E, really, of going through there. And then really test us, and then say, well, these are the ones that are a problem. Now, Laurence, of course, keeps reminding us the SAYE issue is something that she doesn't think is clear under here. So, Laurence, you and others will identify the circumstances, or perhaps some specific fact patterns, and an explanation of how you think the existing model is or is not dealing with the issue. And perhaps, even if you have the time, you can suggest some thoughts for improvement that I think will help the staff. That doesn't mean that I'm asking you to write the next staff paper, but to give some input over the next couple of weeks so that the staff can work on this, think about it. I'm pretty sure that the way you work, you'll be feeding back offline to ask some more questions, to get some clarity, to get some sense of whether we're going in the right direction, so that when we come back at the July meeting, we would have a paper that addresses specifically the performance conditions, and then also to look at the entire package of recommendations, I think, so to build on what you've got in paragraph 2 of paper 3D at the moment. That makes it a bit difficult for me to know how to ask the second question, which is what you want to do if we don't know what the full package is at the moment. So with your permission, I'm not going to ask that question, but I'll leave it with a reminder that even if we accept all of the recommendations, very broad, that the staff has come back with, that doesn't commit us to doing a full rewrite, overhaul of some paragraphs. I think, as Scott said yesterday, an extensive rewrite of a selected few paragraphs, which I think is a very elegant way of expressing it. But we're not committed to doing that. We're not committed to issuing an interpretation. We're not committed to not doing anything. If we can leave that decision open until the next meeting when we've got all the facts. Because the other thing that I'm sure that you'll want to consult with your colleagues and associations with is the extent to which they would welcome a change that might improve the understanding of IFRS2, but actually might be just another burdensome change that they could well do without. So it would be appropriate to get those views as well. Peggy, did you want to?
Yeah, if I could just make a request. If you could send us actually an email with that request, with the exhibits in it, and maybe give an example, because it would be easier for us to send it out to others to take a look at, as well as I think it carries more weight when people see that the IASB is making this formal request.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. And we'll include the current charts.
Exactly.
B and whatever the other two are. B, okay. Depends which paper you look at, I suppose. But, yeah. So the charts of where we are at the moment, and then...
And maybe an example of how, you know, a simple example of how the charts would work, how you'd interpret something. I think that would be good.
Okay. We'll do that. Is the staff agreeable to doing that?
Definitely. I think...
All right. So just formally, does anybody object to the approach I've just outlined? No. Okay. Then, Jo Hope, Michael, thank you for all of your efforts so far, and you have the encouragement to do more. Diana.
So just one last comment around the potential process forward as to whether it is worthwhile asking the staff to consider, if you like, what they would recommend to us in terms of how to deal with the package going forward, as to how hard or simple they think it might be to do that, you know, the various ways of, or what the various options are, like giving it to Jean-Louis and sending him away, or us doing it, etc., so that we can, they can come back with a recommendation to us for, on that as well in July?
Depending on how things go, it's my current anticipation that we will bring to you our recommendation. And at the present time, it would be, such as Scott and Bob have said, a significant rewrite to a few areas that we would actually probably show you our draft changes, at least for discussion point. It is not a be-all, end-all. It's a starting point for discussion, but it may provide a little more clarity. We will then specifically focus on performance conditions, and to the extent you provide us with examples where you feel there is a confusion, we will go through a detailed analysis of each of those so that we can give that back to you, and we can walk through and hopefully put this to conclusion.
Okay, thanks, Michael. All right, that then takes us on to the next item on the agenda. So, Jeho, thank you. I think, Toshi, you're eager to get back in the saddle here and discuss an unusual, but for those affected by it, very significant circumstance. We're going to look at agenda paper 12 now.